Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, January 20, 2021. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Illinois Impact, 7-Day Positivity Rates Fall to October Levels. Region 6's next move could come as soon as Friday. Some encouraging COVID news to start your day. Champaign County's 7-day positivity rate fell Tuesday to its lowest point since October 27, 5.5%. The state rate dropped to 5.7%, the lowest it's been since October 23. Also falling for the ninth straight day, the 7-day rate in Region 6 to 6.5%. The region needs 3 straight days under 6.5%, as well as 3 days in a row of declining hospitalizations to advance from Tier 1 to Phase 4. The soonest Region 6 could move to the less restrictive Phase 4 is Friday. It wouldn't mean any big changes to the indoor dining limitations, still 25% capacity or 25 people per room, but would allow for gatherings of up to 50 people. Over the holiday weekend, another 31 inmates at the Danville Correctional Center tested positive for COVID-19, bringing the active case count to 167, according to the state. Another 867 cases at the prison are considered recovered. The number of Champaign County residents who've received the first dose of the vaccine rose by 281 Tuesday to 10,866, 5.1% of the population, getting both doses, 2,031 others, 0.97%. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. Rantoul City Schools, slow going on first day of testing. By Dave Hinton, Rantoul. Rantoul City Schools returned to in-person learning Tuesday and made rapid antigen testing available to anyone who is symptomatic or has come in close contact with someone with the COVID-19 virus. Superintendent Michelle Ramage said only one person was tested. The test was administered at Broad Meadow Elementary and came back negative. She said she didn't know if the test was given to a student or a member of staff. It's going to take a little while for people to understand what this is all about. The intent is to know immediately who has potential positive cases, Ramage said. The testing is not mandatory, but we hope that families would choose to be tested, she said. The doctor serving the school district advised officials rapid antigen tests shouldn't be given to everyone, only to those who have symptoms or have been in close contact with a COVID-19 positive person. If we test asymptomatic individuals, it could lead to a false positive result, Ramage said earlier. In this situation, no symptoms. The individual is quarantined until the results of a PCR test are available. Therefore, our doctor said we could end up with more individuals quarantined unnecessarily until the PCR test result is given. She said the test is much more accurate for symptomatic individuals. Results are available within 15 minutes. Ramage said that is much better than waiting several days, as has happened in the past. I think the whole purpose of this test is to know immediately if you're positive, so we can immediately put in our mitigation plans, Ramage said. In the past, we would find out 3 to 4 days later. It's too late to do anything about that. If we know immediately, we have a whole plan in place. In that case, classes are shut down, cleaning begins, and contact tracing starts. Administrators and some central office staff took the antigen test last week and none came back positive. Rantoul City Schools is one of 40 districts that qualified to receive the free antigen testing kits. Ramage said there are 160 more students coming back for in-person learning than before those classes were called off in the fall. Ramage said some of those are students attending the district's new afternoon pre-kindergarten classes. The rest are students who opted not to take remote-only classes. The district is operating under a hybrid plan. Each student attends 4 hours a day, 2 days a week. The rest of the classes are done remotely. Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign, Heart of the Matter. New memorial marks local lives lost, 102 and counting, during pandemic. By Deborah Pressey, Urbana. With COVID-19 deaths steadily climbing in Champaign County, a local church is providing something its leaders say the community has lacked throughout the pandemic, a visual remembrance of lives lost and a place to mourn them. On the Tuesday's first National Day of Mourning for Victims of the Pandemic, a new memorial called Open Hearts was dedicated at Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign. As of Tuesday, it included 102 hearts in front of the church at 309 West Green Street, Urbana, one heart for every local life lost to COVID-19. But more will be added as there are additional deaths in the county, according to the Reverend Florence Kaplow, the church's lead minister. Also to be added to the hearts will be names of the people they represent for those families that want to share the names of their lost loved ones, Kaplow said. She marvels at the sheer number of lives lost nationally in the pandemic, which just passed 400,000. I mean, that is an inconceivable number, Kaplow said. That large a number can be difficult for people to comprehend, but placing a heart in front of the church for each Champaign County resident who has died with COVID-19 may help people better grasp that behind those numbers have been human lives, according to Kaplow. Suddenly, it's not separate from whom we are, and I think that's what we haven't had, she said. Champaign County's total COVID-19 deaths climbed to 102 Tuesday, with that number including dozens of additional deaths than when planning for the memorial got underway in December. The idea for the memorial came from a conversation she had with a church member, Julie Lout, as they were discussing the lack of real ways for the community to grieve COVID-19 deaths, Kaplow said. It was heartbreaking to see that number almost doubled from the time we started thinking about this, Lout said. Kaplow said grief for COVID-19 deaths has been compounded by the inability to mourn the losses together with others. We have been in the middle of a catastrophe for nearly a year now, but deaths are often anonymous, and we have been cut off from ways of grieving collectively, Kaplow said. We hope that this memorial will be a place of reflection and support for our Champaign-Urbana community. University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones, one of several local officials who came to the dedication, called the memorial a moving symbol, allowing the community to remember our loved ones, to see their faces and hear their voices. Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride described those 102 COVID-19 fatalities this way. These are individuals who had families, friends, colleagues, and neighbors who are now left to grieve their loss, sometimes in isolation, she said. We also know that there are many who have lost family, friends, and colleagues who have died in other parts of the state, country, or world. They too are often left to grieve alone. We also know that, sadly, there will be more deaths in our community before this pandemic is brought under control. Kaplow said the memorial will remain at her church for a couple of months, and then other churches will be offered an opportunity to host it on their grounds. I hope this idea spreads across the country so we can really do something to recognize all these lives, she said. Anyone who would like to share the name of a loved one who has died of COVID-19 in Champaign County can provide that information by emailing the church at covid-memorial@uucuc.org. Ask the Admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. The first wave of vaccines is for frontline workers and nursing home residents. Fine. When do the second and third waves start? Presumably, you will not wait until 100% of those eligible for the first wave get the vaccine. That will never happen, right? What percentage of first wave vaccinations will you accept before you move on to the second and third waves? Prioritization of vaccines for Champaign County is available on the Health District's website. The first group to receive vaccines, called Phase 1A, includes frontline healthcare workers and residents and staff of long-term care facilities. This is followed by 1B, which is a much larger group. In Champaign County, we have broken down Phase 1B into subgroups based on local trends, including morbidity and mortality. We offered Phase 1A vaccines to those eligible for about 2 to 3 weeks. Once all willing 1A population received them, we started offering vaccines to prioritized 1B members, which includes those over age 75. We will continue to go down the list after giving each group enough opportunity to sign up. If someone is hesitant or unsure or is not interested, we will not wait indefinitely for them to make up their mind. Instead, we will move on to the next group. If someone decides eventually to get vaccinated, they can get it at a later time, along with the general population. From the Our County section, Everett Kruger, a life remembered. Savoy man recalled as good friend, good shot. By Mary Shank Savoy. A former Urbana police officer, parole agent, and lifelong golfer is being remembered as a meticulous, competitive, but warm person to whom folks gravitated. He was so serious, but such a gentleman. Local golfing legend Joe Thompson of Urbana said of his decades-long friend Everett Kruger. Mr. Kruger, 81, of Savoy, died early Thursday at Carl Foundation Hospital after a year-long bout with cancer and some 3 weeks after he played his last round of the sport he loved. He is survived by his wife Annette and 2 sons. A gentle spirit, Mr. Kruger was known to co-workers and friends as a serious-minded person with a great sense of humor who was good at everything he did, from solving murders to hitting a straight drive to keeping an immaculate lawn. Raised in Urbana, he graduated from Urbana High School in 1957. As a young man, he worked as a caddy at the Champaign Country Club. He joined the Urbana Police Department in 1966 and served for 23 years. He worked his way up from patrol to supervising investigations and retired as a sergeant. He helped solve some of the city's most memorable and heinous crimes, including catching the Enema Bandit, who tied up and gave enemas to young women in the late 1960s and early 70s. A serial rapist who attacked women near campus in the mid-1970s, and a man accused of fatally shooting 2 Colorado drug dealers whose decomposing bodies were found in the back of a U-Haul truck in an alley on a sweltering day in August 1981. He was the best shot in the entire history of the department, said his friend and protege John Lockhart, who had his own illustrious 44-year career with Urbana Police before retiring in 2015. I have always thought John Lockhart was one of the best detectives I had ever met, and Everett Krueger taught John Lockhart how to be a detective, said Urbana Police Chief Bryant Serafin. Too young to have worked with Mr. Krueger, Serafin knew him from his time teaching concealed carry weapons qualifying courses to retired officers. He was a good shot, Serafin said of an older Mr. Krueger. Mr. Krueger retired in 1989, just before his 50th birthday, then went on to have a satisfying 20-year career as a parole agent for the Illinois Department of Corrections, keeping tabs on people recently released from prison. Thompson and Lockhart said Mr. Krueger's incredible memory for where people lived and their relationships to others served him well in his work. He said sometimes he enjoyed that parole job more than police work, said Lockhart, who started meeting his mentor for breakfast regularly about a year ago, before COVID-19. One morning, they invited a local businessman whom the two of them had worked together decades earlier to convict of armed robbery. They were talking like old buddies and having a good time talking about the past, Lockhart said. They did not know I was even there. Lockhart recalled that Mr. Krueger got the co-defendant in that robbery to open up about the crime. Lockhart gave the jail interview after 30 minutes, convinced it was not productive. Krueger came back and said, "I got the confession." He was very good at getting interviews with victims and confessions from suspects, Lockhart said. He was very good to work for and with. His philosophy was that there are different ways of solving cases. You should let the investigator figure out his own way instead of dictating how every interview should be done, he added. That allowed us to feel we were solving our own cases, and we were the boss of our own cases. That patience also manifested on the links, said Thompson, and Mike Wallner, general manager of the U of I golf courses. He was a competitive golfer. He loved to play in tournaments. He was a good guy, fun to be around. He got along with everybody, said Wallner, calling the more challenging U of I Orange course his friend's favorite of the many area courses he frequented. News Gazette columnist Lauren Tate was also a longtime golfing buddy. I always felt honored and somewhat embarrassed to play with Everett because he did everything right on the course, and I didn't, whether it was shot-making or overreacting, Tate said. Thompson said his friend didn't have a long-distance shot, but he had great accuracy. He was an extremely straight driver, very efficient in everything he did, on and off the golf course, Thompson said. He would shoot his age or better than his age, which is difficult to do, Wallner said of the benchmark for older golfers. Everett was able to do that multiple times. He golfed all the time. He would play in the rain, when it was cold, as long as he could get a couple of guys to play with him. When he played at the U of I, Mr. Krueger drove himself from his nearby home in a 17-year-old black golf cart that his friend said looks brand new. If you rode in it, you couldn't put your feet up. Your feet better be totally clean, Thompson said. It's got XM radio in it. It's absolutely perfect. He was meticulous. He took care of his stuff, Wallner said. He was not a guy who was not going to come out with a t-shirt and cutoffs. Lockhart agreed about Mr. Krueger's attention to detail, saying his supervisor once admonished him for failing to initial something. He was very precise on the reports and filing and documentation. He initialed everything with the date and time he read it, Lockhart said. He said, that will serve you well if you get in the habit of doing that. Nowhere was Mr. Krueger's fastidiousness more apparent than his lawn. His yard is a showpiece, said Thompson, who added it made Mr. Kruger a target for good-natured ribbing. People would drive by and say, "I may have spotted a weed on your yard. Better check that." "He'd see it before you would," Thompson said, adding that Mr. Kruger's garage was equally neat. He wouldn't even park his cars in the garage because he didn't want salt and water on the floor, he said with a chuckle, adding, "He's got three of every tool there is." Thompson said Mr. Kruger was also a fan of Illini sports, and years ago liked to drive a couple of different classic cars he had from the 50s and early 60s. "He was an interesting guy," Thompson said. "It's just a tough loss for the golf industry in this area," Wallner added. University of Illinois, showing they care. Child Development Lab getting creative in adapting to coronavirus restrictions. By Ben Zichterman, Urbana. During a normal year, the University of Illinois Child Development Lab would have thousands of students and researchers observing the children learning there. But this has not been a normal school year. "We can't have 4,000 students coming through our doors to do observations," Director Brent McBride said. "We had to quickly pivot back in March." When the U of I shifted to online learning, the Child Development Lab in Urbana stopped the in-person observations and focused just on providing child care. And when Governor J.B. Pritzker implemented a stay-at-home order, the lab applied for and got an emergency license to provide care for up to 28 children of essential medical workers. Then, once the region moved to phase 3 of the state's reopening plan, the Child Development Lab reopened with 88 children instead of its usual 160, and with severe restrictions, McBride said. By August, they were allowed to care for 144 children. "We spent the entire summer coming up with different ways we could support research and teaching on a remote basis," McBride said. "Normally, students and researchers would be in the classrooms observing how children develop. You might think you understand it, but not until you see it in action do you understand why it's so important," McBride said. The lab, which is part of the Department of Human Development and Family Studies in the College of ACES, hosts class projects, student teachers, health interns, and research projects. That all had to move online with virtual observations and data collection. "We reached out to instructors that typically use our program and identified different ways to support their student learning experiences," McBride said. "From providing live stream of classrooms to going into instructors' Zoom meetings with students. They also set up targeted virtual recordings of classrooms that could be viewed on demand. Over the course of the fall semester, we didn't come anywhere close to 4,000 students, but we were able to support 588 students from across campus," McBride said. He said having virtual observations was beneficial in some ways, allowing students to watch and re-watch a certain action they are studying. "But it's not the real world," he said. "You can't truly interpret the development without the entirety of the physical context." He also said it's been harder to engage with parents when they drop off their children because of the check-in procedures. "Parent engagement is something we really emphasize," McBride said. "When a parent drops off their child, they might spend 5 to 10 minutes talking to the teacher if issues come up. Because of COVID-19 restrictions, we can't do that." For the children, McBride said, "we're trying as much as possible to keep things as normal as we can. But COVID-19 means they can't share a big tub of Play-Doh. Each child has a little container of Play-Doh," McBride said. "That's been a little bit hard, but the kids are adapting well." He also said they're adapting well to wearing masks. "It's no big deal for them," McBride said, as just part of what their life is like. Still, he'd be happy when COVID-19 goes away. "We're looking forward to when we can go back to our normal approach," McBride said. First Busey Corp., company expanding further into Chicago market. By Ben Sigterman, Champaign. First Busey Corp. is buying a Chicago area bank for about $191 million. First Busey Corp., the parent company of Busey Bank, announced Tuesday its purchase of Cummins American Corp., parent of Glenview State Bank. Glenview State Bank has 7 branches in the northwestern suburbs of Chicago, with about $1.4 billion in assets. With the purchase, which consists of about 73% cash and 27% stock, First Busey will have combined assets of $11.9 billion. First Busey expects to improve its deposit share in the Chicagoland metro area from 32nd to 20th. The transaction is expected to close in the second quarter of this year, after which Glenview State Bank's branches will become Busey Bank. Once completed, Busey will have more than 70 branches, with 60 in Illinois, 10 in Missouri, 4 in Florida, and 1 in Indiana. With Glenview, Busey is now well above the $10 billion asset mark, a threshold it crossed last year. Once banks reach $10 billion in assets, they are subject to more vigorous stress testing to determine their health and can't charge as high a payment processing fees. They also become subject to oversight from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The addition of Glenview State Bank is the second major purchase of a Chicago area bank in recent years by First Busey. In 2017, it bought Joliet-based First Community Financial Partners, which had 9 branches in the southwest suburbs, for about $240 million. History, area history. In 1921, an overland automobile belonging to real estate man C.F. Harris of Champaign was badly damaged when it collided head-on with a streetcar in front of Citizens Bank in Champaign. In 1971, an expertly placed, time-released gas bomb interrupted a meeting of students and the University of Illinois trustees at the Chicago campus. No one was injured. In 2006, the University of Illinois was continuing with design work and fundraising for the renovation of Memorial Stadium, and the project was expected to get formal approval from the U of I Board of Trustees that spring. U of I President B. Joseph White told the board that he, Chancellor Richard Hermond, and Athletic Director Ron Gunther reviewed financial statements, and the U of I has a sound financing plan for the proposed $116 million renovation, $152 million in today's dollars. The project would add 49 private suites, 200 indoor club seats, and 1,200 outdoor seats to the west side of the stadium, as well as a renovated press box, more seats in each end zone, wider concourses, additional restrooms, and concession areas and life safety work, including replacing the concrete and steel supporting the horseshoe. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 20, 2021. Please stay tuned.